Good to be with you. I got a dumb question. What part of central Pennsylvania are you based?
I am in State College, where Penn State is, which you know so well.
Yes, I do. Haven't covered it. And because I was wondering if it was in St. Mary's, because in St. Mary's, that was my first writing assignment when I was in high school, because I wrote for the St. Mary's Daily Press and covered the Steelers. And this was in 1972. And as you know, as we've talked about, is that I covered Penn State for 1 year back in the late 70s, and it was one of Joe Paterno's worst year, because they went 7-5 and got they went to the Liberty Bowl and lost and had a lot of off-season problems, and Joe kicked me off the beat after 1 year.
St. Mary's, my son Christopher married a young lady from St. Mary's, and the wedding was up there 2 years ago, so I literally was just up there 2 years ago for an extended period of time. So
I would hope that you did the right local thing and had Straub's beer.
Oh, well, of course we did. It's what kept the reception going. Only John and I could talk about this, because I was actually around in 79 when you were there too, John. So
you didn't make it to the Friday night cocktail happy hour that we always have, did you?
I did.
Oh, you were there? Okay. Yeah.
I was on the road, and then if I recall back then, it would have been at the Nittany Lion Inn at home. Does that sound right?
That's correct, yeah.
Yep.
And remember what one of the things that somebody leaked, because I'm really good at protecting sources, but remember in those meetings, I was the one to ask, because Joe was thinking about going into politics.
Right.
And then I would ask him, say, are you really thinking about leaving football and going into politics? And he says, I'm not going to give
up
college football to the Barry Switzers and Jackie Sherrills of the world. And then, of course, somebody took the word back to him. It wasn't me. And he blamed me. But it's like, and so at the Pitt-Penn State game, that if you remember, Pitt won in-state college, Jackie walked up to him right before the game and goes, apologize if I'm taking away your football chances, or you're taking away your chance to get into politics. And Joe just fumed.
Oh, yeah. And I knew it wasn't you, by the way. So I've always known that. It's always been the rumor.
We always had the Sever Toretti battles with...
Oh, my goodness, yes.
I mean, Sever Toretti was always in some kind of a battle with Collins from the Philadelphia Inquirer. It was an eventful time.
Oh, it was. It was very eventful. And Sever Toretti, known as Tor... I remember it like it was yesterday. And Booker Moore had a problem that year, and they went through three quarterbacks that year. That was a tough year.
Mm-hmm. I still remember I was sitting there at the Pittsburgh Press, and I get a call, and they say, hey, did you know that Giuseppe Harris just got kicked off the team? And it's like, then I check it out and find it out and then write it. And so I'm just a lawyer here in State College, and it was usually somebody from the building. I mean, the staff, but on the in the office would be calling me up and telling me all these different things that turn out to be true.
I know, boy. I remember that year like it was, and they played Tulane in the Liberty Bowl.
And then, of course, remember, did you have to go down like I did to the police station when the one person, one of the players in the team, ended up taking a rental car, going over to some person's house, breaking into the house, and had a gun pointed at his head?
I did not. I was not at the police station for that, but I remember the incident.
Yep.
All right. And this is after a 78 season where almost everything went perfectly.
I mean, it was incredible.
It really was. It was, and they had to kind of regain control, and did. Went 10-2 the next year. So
yeah, 7-5 that year, as I remember.
Yeah. Yep.
Including the bowl game.
Including the bowl game. All right. So, your Washington Post column yesterday, where you talked about, it's easy with Brady and Mahomes to talk about, but you went into other areas. It's interesting. I thought the first two items you put down, John, I think are related in a way. And one of them is, can the Bucs slow the Chiefs' track star speed, which the first time they didn't? And can the Chiefs overcome the loss of Eric Fisher at left tackle? To me, those two work hand in hand, because that's the situation the Bucs had with a remade Green Bay offensive line in the NFC Championship game. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, because when you go back and you look at that, David Bakhtiari, the left tackle, probably I think he was considered to be the best left tackle not named Trent Williams in the league last year. He was out with a knee injury because he blew out his ACL. And so, they had to replace him. And with Jason Pierre-Paul and Shaq Barrett, they were able to get 5 sacks on Aaron Rodgers and 8 hits on the quarterback. And now it's even worse if you're Kansas City because, you lose your left tackle, Eric Fisher, who went to the Pro Bowl, was selected for the Pro Bowl. I mean, he blows out the Achilles. And so now Mike Remmers, who is filling in for the injured Mitchell Schwartz, who's the right tackle. You have Remmers moving to left tackle, a guard Andrew Wiley moving to right tackle, Stefan Wisniewski, which of course is an interesting Penn State name. Stefan Wisniewski then goes to guard, and you look and you say that 4 of the 5 guys on the starting offensive line have been cut at least one time. And so Andy Reid's just really patching it together, but you have Patrick Mahomes, who I think is going to get sacked 4 times in the game, but he's still so good that he can overcome that.
Which then brings it to the next part. Brady early in the season, new offense, philosophy of Bruce Arians, the ability to throw deep. What have you seen from him in the latter part of the season as he is adjusted and Bruce has also adjusted to Brady?
Yeah, I mean, and part of the problem was, I mean, Brady's throws were just off. I mean, there was one stretch where he went 0-for-27 with 3 interceptions and no touchdowns and no completions, throwing the ball 21 air yards or more. But once they started getting past midseason, it kind of started after the Kansas City game in Week 12 and after the earlier game against the New Orleans Saints, so they lost 38-3, that he started connecting better, and he's getting better and better each week. And understand that in this game, you have 2 of the 3 quarterbacks who have led the league in air yards, balls thrown downfield, 21 yards plus or more. And so they tested it deep. And even in the game that Brady struggled with in the loss to Kansas City in Week 12, he did hit 5 passes that went 29 yards or more. So he's getting better and better at it. And, of course, I think he's adjusting to what Bruce Arians wants. And that's going to be it. But still, he has some bad quarters. Like he had the one 3 interceptions and 3 possessions that obviously was not good. But, again, I mean, he's getting better and better in that offense.
So, John, I saw Ronald Jones against Penn State when I did the Rose Bowl a few years ago. So I have an indication what a young Ronald Jones looks like. We know what Leonard Fournette's been able to do. And my broadcast partner for Penn State, Jack Ham, last year when he was at LSU, he talked about Clyde Edwards-Helaire as a tough guy to cover in the pass game. So what can running backs mean in this game? Because running backs aren't often talked about in the NFL much anymore.
Yeah, unfortunately, not as much as it should because, I mean, there is a continued trend right now that particularly with the Kyle Shanahan, Sean McVay running schemes, they're so far advanced and have been advanced for so many years that there is more running elements. I mean, you go into the playoffs, 7 of the 10 top teams that made the playoffs all had good running game numbers, and even Green Bay, a team that was always a West Coast offense that would pass the ball 60%, was 7th most as far as the percentage of run plays. But the ironic part is these two teams, Tampa Bay and Kansas City, have become more passing teams. They're both 60-40 pass to run. But it's interesting on Clyde Edwards-Helaire because obviously he hasn't been the same since coming back from his injury. Now today he was completely healthy, full practice, was able to do all the things he can normally do. But once they drafted him, the scouts around the league basically said this is the best back that Andy Reid's ever had for the offense that he runs. And, of course, I mean, with LeSean McCoy, how good he was. Deuce Staley and all those different guys that have been through there that, here's the guy that he considered the best because, as Jack mentions, that he catches the ball well, he runs the ball well. He was really having a great rookie season until the injury. So, but what I'm looking at is that you go back in the first game in Week 12, I mean, because they trailed 17-0 in the first quarter, they had to throw away the running game for Tampa Bay, so they only had 12 carries for running backs, and it was maybe 16 or 17 for Kansas City. So I anticipate it's probably going to be the same thing. So one back or two backs may get 50 yards, but I don't anticipate a 100-yard back in this game because I don't think any one back is going to get more than 16 carries.
Right. Now, you could see a combined 100 if you add in pass yardage.
Yeah.
So that's what you're talking about. You're in an incredible football market. Seattle's one of the best in the country. Los Angeles is not a great football market. They just made the trade Goff to Detroit for Matthew Stafford. But they've also made other deals, including the Ramsey deal and so forth, where they have traded a lot of draft capital to make this happen. How are you viewing what the Rams are doing with draft capital versus players acquired?
Well, one thing, I mean, you almost need to do this in this division because it's so competitive. I mean, competitive to a point where, I mean, San Francisco traded for Trent Williams, traded for right. Jimmy Garoppolo. I mean, the Rams, Jalen Ramsey, they've made a whole bunch of trades, and certainly the Matthew Stafford one is going to make them better on offense. But at some point, it catches up to you because now with Jared Goff off the roster, they will not have a first-round pick for 8 consecutive years. Because they traded, obviously, 2022, 2023, and Goff was 2016. So no first-round picks. And at some point, I mean, unless you're just lucky in making your draft selections, and it's not like they've been loaded with draft choices, it's going to catch up to them. And then the other problem with the Stafford thing, as good as it's going to be, because their offense is going to be better, they now have $42.2 million in both dead cap money for Goff, $20 million included for the Stafford deal as far as his base save. That's 23.3% of a cap that might be $180 million. And so they're not going to be able to re-sign Leonard Floyd, their good safety, John Johnson. They're going to have to cut probably one or two guys on the offensive line. So there's a good and bad to this trade. Good from the quarterback standpoint, but bad from the cap standpoint.
Now there's this interesting part. We know that the Eagles hired Nick Sirianni to be the head coach. In reality, the play caller in Indianapolis was Frank Reich. Sirianni wants to call plays in Philadelphia. Shane Waldron is the choice to be the offensive coordinator for the Seahawks. But again, he hasn't been a play caller. Yet you've done a lot of research on this, and people should not be alarmed at what they hear when they hear that, because it's actually a better track record than people realize.
Yeah, because I understand it. And again, everybody is copying the Shanahan, including Sean McVay, who learned it when he was in Washington and eventually became the play caller for the Redskins, is that what you see is that running offense is so advanced and has been for really 3 decades, because Mike Shanahan ran that. He just didn't have the motion that they run and everything else. And so the interesting part, and even Doug Peterson, who lost his job, incorporated more of the Shanahan running offense when he was in Philadelphia his past year. But that's the trend, and so you can see the track record of what happens. I mean, Sean McVay called all the plays and still has. Yet Zach Taylor gets a head coaching job, and until he got hurt, was working well with Joe Burrow at quarterback, throwing 40 passes a game. Then you saw that Matt LaFleur left the Rams and went to Tennessee, and then propped up the career of Ryan Tannehill and propped up the career of Derrick Henry, and then got the Green Bay job, and then he incorporated more running plays there. And then, of course, you have Arthur Smith, who worked several years with Shanahan in Washington, working and learning from Matt LaFleur. He has a great year this year at Tennessee, and now he's the head coach of Atlanta. So, and these guys didn't call plays. And so now what do you see in Shane, he comes to Seattle with the same possibilities, because now what he can do is go in there, take that running offense, which is very advanced, because you can have motion, you can have RPOs, you can have quicker tempo, all these different things to upgrade the Seahawks offense.
Finally, any quick thoughts on the 5 selections for the Hall of Fame?
We had the meeting 2 weeks ago. In fact, it was on a Wednesday, and we have no idea. I think we have some idea, because we know that Peyton Manning and Charles right. Woodson should be able to make it as first ballot. I still see if Calvin Johnson slides in there as a first ballot. I'm hoping that one of the offensive linemen, Alan Faneca or Tony Boselli, make it in, because we need to continue to get the offensive linemen in, and then we'll see if it's going to be good for John Lynch. But what we did is that we took it down to 10, and we voted it down to 5, but they wouldn't tell us what the 5 is.
Right.
So like you, me, and everybody else, we have to wait till Saturday night to find out the results.
I do have to ask you, outside of that, Bill Nunn is being considered. And, of course, with your Pittsburgh roots and what he meant to the Steeler organization, what did you think about seeing his name on there as a contributor?
I'm so proud because, you know, I'm on the contributor committee, and I pushed the idea of having Bill Nunn go in. And, you know, I said a lot of things because in 1972, when I was, you know, writing for the St. Mary's Daily Press, he was the one who took in me as far as, I mean, the team approved me for training camp, but he was the one who was running training camp. And so I had to, you know, go in and get credentialed by him. And, of course, you know, he was at the Courier, the Pittsburgh Courier, and as a writer. And of course, he was so far advanced because, you know, he was a great writer, but also he was the first person, and he would do it for the paper, that would go ahead and look at the you know, the black colleges and be able to go ahead and create an all-star team. And he was so good in talking to the coaches, he developed so much interest in the league, that's why he got the coaching job. And then the other part is his father, who owned the paper, and him, particularly back in 72, in the early 70s, you know, there was, you know, a lot of racism back then. And so sometimes even the top athletes coming into Pittsburgh, you know, couldn't get into hotels because they weren't allowed. So he would, they would bring him, the players and the people, into their homes to be able to take care of you know, them when they were in town. I mean, great person, great scout. I mean, certainly he had such a big impact in that 1974 draft, you know, because you know, he went and saw John Stallworth, and John had a bad time, and so he was one of the few scouts that stayed an extra day because he knew how bad the field was. And so then Stallworth got a faster run, and he ends up getting drafted and becoming a Hall of Famer. And then, of course, Donnie Schell, he found. I mean, L.C. Greenwood, he found. I mean, he was just phenomenal.
And Mel Blount. Oh, and Mel Blount, by the way, he also said, hey, maybe in the second round you ought to take this guy from Kent State, Jack Lambert.
Yeah, I mean, so, I mean, he was fantastic, and his impact on that great Super Bowl run of 4 and 6 years is all there, because what would now have, there's 10 in the Hall of Fame, and he was responsible for more than half.
I always have a great time talking to you. I really appreciate the time that you give us very, very much, John. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.